Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger fuel centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
The summer wind came blowing in from across the sea. It lingered there.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Packers Podcast. My name is Michael Cohen, and I'm here, as always, with Bob McGinn. Bob, what do we have for a little song there? We went a little bit of an old school feel.
Francis Sinatra. 1967.
You a big Sinatra fan?
No, but, you know, periodically I'll put them on at home. I was listening to, when I was driving in Ann Arbor for the M Daily reunion, I had the 60s on Sirius on, and Luke Christie, kind of, he had a bunch of hits in the 60s. He was on there, and for 2 hours, his favorite 45s of all time. It was outstanding, and he came up with this song.
I've heard some shows. There's actually a station, was it here in Memphis? I can't remember, an oldie station that does, like, once a week, Forgotten 45s. It's a cool show that they put on for, like, an hour, where they just pull out tracks you never thought you'd hear again.
And Lou's probably in his 70s, and he's heard a lot of music, and he was pulling songs from all different kind of genres. It was awesome, and I was over on the top of Lake Michigan at the time, and I was belting Summer Wind Out. Thank God nobody was in the car.
I think you chose that song because it's warm here and you know it's not going to last very long.
The autumn wind.
Yeah, the autumn wind. Exactly. Exactly. So,
well, you know, that song was interesting to you also, right?
Yeah, yeah. When you sent me an email today and you said that's the song it would be. And I said, well, that was one of my father's favorites back in the day. My dad had a large influence on the music I listened to growing up. Really got me into the 60s and... instilled in me that whether I believed it at the time or not, that was the greatest musical decade of all time. And he loved Sinatra, and so that was one of the songs that he always listened to as one of, you know, his two or three favorites. So okay. I recognized it right away.
It's good. Yeah.
Well, let's see. Today is Wednesday. It is late. It is 10 o'clock, and we are recording this. You know, we've been back here since early Monday morning. Have you recovered enough yet from our wonderful red-eye experience of Sunday night?
Just started to recover this afternoon, I'd say. But, yeah, red-eyes are a bear, huh, Mike?
Yeah, that was my first red-eye. So we left San Francisco at 12:15 a.m., got to Chicago 5 after 6.
Yeah.
And then we had 3 hours to kill. So you took me over to the Macaroni Grill, and
on
we
that
got
cake
a little
concourse.
Breakfast. Yep. 24 hours a day, the Macaroni Grill is open.
Some kind of a breakfast skillet.
Yeah, it was fair, as I recall. You ate all yours. I wasn't wild about it.
I'll give it a 5. Okay. 6, 5.5.
Okay.
What are you giving it?
A 4.
Okay.
Yeah. So then we came back. We were in Green Bay by what? A couple minutes before 10?
Yep.
And then the week began, and Bob immediately started watching film. No rest for the weary.
Got to bed at 1 a.m.
Yeah, it was brutal.
Yeah.
It was brutal.
And get up and start all over again on the Rams, right, Mike? Yeah.
Which we will get to later. But first, we've got a couple things related to the Packers that we need to cover. And obviously the most important of those would be one number 75, Brian Bulaga, back at practice today for the first time since having minor knee surgery to clean up a little bit of a meniscus tear. Bulaga was listed as a limited participant, but he was out there. He went through individual drills at full speed, which I thought was important, and he looked okay. He looked okay, which I was amazed at because, you know, I don't know what they did to his meniscus exactly. They could have trimmed it out, or which is what they probably did. But, I mean, I had that done twice, and I can't even imagine running around 2.5 weeks after that.
Yeah.
Just because the incisions aren't even healed in 2.5 weeks. It takes longer than that. And if they had stitches to close it up, a lot of times the dissolvable ones take 3 to 5 weeks to dissolve.
So these MCLs, you either repair them or remove them? Cartilage.
Yeah, the cartilage. You either repair it, and that's an extremely long recovery, and I'll tell you why in a second. Or you can remove it, which is a quick recovery. The problem with removing it is you never get that meniscus back. It doesn't grow back. The problem with repairing it is that it takes forever to recover. And the reason is they have to use dissolvable stitches. And I had this done as well. I've had four knee surgeries, for those of you who haven't listened. So I know a little bit more than some about the knee surgeries. But they sew the meniscus back together with these sutures that are dissolvable on the inside. But you have to wear an immobilizer, which is this big brace that goes from the middle of your quad all the way down to just above your ankle. And the reason for that is because any sharp movement of the knee joint after they repair the meniscus can immediately undo the sutures on the inside. They're very fragile. And so it takes a long time to recover. And I had my ACL done, and my recovery for the ACL was 7.5 months, just under 8. I was able to start playing again. And then I had the meniscus repair, and that recovery was about 6.5 months. Mm. So there was almost no difference for an extremely different injury. So that's why I'm almost certain that they trimmed Bulaga's meniscus out, because there's no way if he repaired it that they could have him back on the field so quickly. But, you know, I guess it's good to have him back, you know, even if he is pushing it a little bit, because I don't know.
So, Mike, so if they trimmed it,
yeah,
then he's going to have problems with this knee down the road, that bone-on-bone thing?
In theory, yeah. Just like I'll likely need a knee replacement of some kind later, because I've had some trimmed out as well. Basically, the meniscus, for those of you who don't know, it just acts like a little cushion in between your bones from your thigh and your shin and where they come together at the knee. So a lot of times what you'll see is the femur will bump into the tibia, the femur obviously being at the top of your leg, the tibia being obviously near your shin. And when they come together, they pinch the meniscus in between, which is what causes the tear a lot of times. And that's what happened to me. So maybe that's what happened to him. We don't know.
Right.
But he's back out there. We don't know if he'll play this weekend, but it looked like he was moving well enough to maybe at least give it a shot. If he does, obviously, he'll take his starting spot, which had been occupied by Don Barclay. And Barclay didn't have the greatest game against the 49ers. Bob, I know you looked at it closely. What did you make of that performance? He struggled against Lynch and those guys, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, one sack to Ahmad Brooks and two against Lynch. Some of these other operations give a whole bunch of pressures, and I'm a conservative pressure giver. And I had him for a total of 7. Pressures would be a sack's a pressure, a knockdown's a pressure, and a hurry's a pressure. And I'm grading these, but I've used the same criteria in my mind for, 25 years, I guess, since I started doing this. So, and that's a lot. 7 in one game is a lot.
And if it weren't for a left-handed throw by Rodgers out of nowhere, he would have given up a fourth sack.
A fourth sack, although that still would have been the pressure count.
Yeah,
been the
right.
Same.
The pressure count the same, but the sack would have been different. But I think it's important to note, you know, I see lots and lots of criticism of Barkley on Twitter and things like that. And there's no doubt that his pass protection has struggled. But you do have to give the guy credit for being a decent run blocker. He's not bad. And I think you and I both agreed that we actually wrote the same thing, and I hadn't even read your report yet, was that the one bad run that he had was late in the game when he whiffed on Lynch off the edge there, and it resulted in a loss of one for Lacy. But he's got massive hands, doesn't he?
10 7/8. I mean, and for a guy only 6'4", that really is massive. I mean, that's almost 11. And at the combine, out of 330 guys, there's maybe one or two have 11-inch hands. You know, what was I going to say about Barkley? You know, he did not run block real well the week before.
Right.
He missed some backside stuff.
But that tends to be his forte, right?
Run blocking.
Compared to pass protection.
I would say so. I'm thinking back to 2012 and 2013. I would say so. He stays after people. And his run blocking was better in this game, you know. But he just he had a tough matchup. And he got, you know, the longer the game went, the worse he got. So we'll talk about his matchup later on, but I mean, he's got Chris Long, Howie Long's son, and he's Bulaga has had problem with Chris Long in their two meetings. I'd have to look back. I think Bulaga had one good game against Long and one maybe not so good. I'm not totally sure on that. Long's a real good player.
And while we're on the subject of tackles real quick, I just want to flip over to Bakhtiari, who is also, I'd seen, gotten a little criticism from fans. You had a nice observation, I thought, in your grading the Packers about what maybe was leading to some of the holding penalties that Bakhtiari had accrued in recent weeks, especially when Rodgers gets out of the pocket. What did you see there?
I mean, you know, he doesn't have eyes in the back of his head. You know, they don't know where that you're blocking. You know from the call and what the action in the backfield is, you know where the quarterback is supposed to be. But then all heck breaks loose, and you don't know what's going on.
Right.
People forget this. You just don't know. Well, I think the coaching point probably is that, and as hard as it is, when Bakhtiari in his has a clock in his mind, and when he feels it is at 3 or 4, and the ball's not out yet, and all of a sudden his man spins away, he has to know that means he's chasing the quarterback, and he's got to release. He can have the best block in the world.
When you say release, you mean let go of whatever grip he's got.
Now, I mean, the holding penalty on Sitton when 53 Bowman, I mean, he missed the pickup and Bowman was rushing by him. He sticks out his left hand and he grabs him. I mean, it's a classic hold. It's a bad play on Sitton's part. He saved his quarterback, but it's still, a well-deserved penalty. This thing with Bakhtiari, yeah, it's a hold. I mean, I think it's a hold. It's hard to argue that it isn't. It's just a tough call on a guy because it doesn't indicate that he shows weakness or inefficiency on this snap.
But by and large, though, the interior of that offensive line has performed well this season, you'd say.
Yeah, although last week now wasn't so good.
Correct.
Right? Yeah. But by and large, they are three really good players, yes.
And as we'll get into later, those three really good players are going to be tested by some darn good players across the ball from the Rams.
We'll get into
that in a minute.
Yep.
But first, I wanted to talk a little bit about a story that I have actually in today's paper. Today's paper. Well, I said today's paper, but we already said we recorded this Wednesday night. But you're hearing this Thursday morning.
It's Thursday's paper,
but right. I just finished writing it before Bob came over.
Yep.
It's an interesting story sort of about some of the changes defensive coordinator Dom Capers made in the offseason to try and speed up the tempo of his defense and be able to match some of these up-tempo offenses that you see around the league now. And obviously Green Bay is capable of doing that with Aaron Rodgers as well. So there are basically two parts to the story, one a little bit more prominent than the other. The first is that Capers actually reduced some of the number of plays that he wanted his defensive players to learn during this offseason and the preparation for this upcoming year. And so Casey Hayward, a cornerback, told me that what Capers did was look at which plays they were almost never going to use anyway. They're sort of those emergency, if we ever needed a funky situation type deal. Mm-hmm. And those were lopped off entirely so that the players didn't have to learn them, just reducing the volume of clutter that they need to sort through. Mm-hmm. And then the second one, and this is the really big change, is he made a complete overhaul to the communication system. And what I mean by that is he went through and he changed the name of every single play. Whereas plays used to have titles that were 6 and 7 words long, he went in and shortened everything to a maximum of one or two words, and an accompanying hand signal. So basically now, it would reduce the amount of time at the line of scrimmage that needs to be spoken in the huddle, because 7 or 8 words is much longer and more complicated than 1 or 2 words, especially if guys don't hear it, then you have to repeat it again.
Yeah.
But it was just a really interesting process. I guess if you can remember, Bob, I'm just curious from back when you were playing, I know it's a totally different level, but did plays have long names in high school football?
No, we were pretty much numbers.
Numbers, okay.
A few words in the passing game. I mean, this is prehistoric stuff.
Sure.
But it was a number, a lot of wing T, so like a 34
okay.
would be the number 3 back. In that case, it would be the fullback through the 4 hole,
sure.
which is just to the left of the center.
How about on the few times where you played defense? I know you played a little bit on the other side of the ball.
Yeah, safety and corner. No, it would just, they'd say what you're in. I mean, in those days, we were playing a 53, a 52, a 7 diamond.
Sure.
7 men across. When you got double tight ends, you got 7 guys covering the 7 linemen and 1 middle backer in the middle. And then the blitzes, he would have a couple names for,
sure.
A Colt blitz, if I kind of remember something like that.
Right.
And we kind of knew what that was, but, it was pretty bare bones.
So Capers, I don't know if he made this up on the spot, or maybe this is a call that he's used in the past. He didn't say, but, the quote that you'll see in the paper is, he goes, "It takes time to say, Eagle wide open me special 7.
Yeah, it does.
And you think about that. A guy has a headset on. He's repeating that. Maybe it's loud. Maybe one guy doesn't hear it. And he goes, what? What? You say it again, and then you've lost 2 or 3 seconds. So now what they did was, and let me start by saying, in those 7 or 8 words, not every word applies to every player. The guys all told me that there might be two words that would apply to the secondary, a word or two for the D-line, and so on and so forth. Okay. So a lot of that 7 or 8 seconds that it takes to go through the plays is just guys trying to wait and hear their particular keywords. What they did now is come up with one word or two words per play that apply to everyone, but they mean different things to different people. Hmm. So in other words, just a random example, I might say shooter to you as a you know, a safety or a corner, and that means cover two. But to me up front, maybe it means a twist on the D line. You never know. I thought that was kind of interesting.
All right, so what about these hand signals? Who's given those?
Yeah, so basically how it works is there can be verbal communication from Capers upstairs to the headset to the rest of the guys, or there can be hand signals brought in from the sideline. And I got the sense that that could be more in terms of like if the crowd noise is preventing the headset from working or something like that.
Okay.
But there's all different lengths of plays, and basically the guys said it's made a big difference. Just even in training camp when they were going up against Rodgers and stuff, you know, it's still tough to play against Rodgers every day, but Hayward told me that they had the fewest missed assignments and mental errors. He called it, quote, an all-time low, end quote, in training camp this year with the new verbal communication and hand signals. Jeez. Which I thought was kind of interesting.
Yeah, it is. It's very.
So,
yeah.
And, you know, the numbers back it up, too, as I think I wrote in the story here. You know, they're tied for fourth in the league for fewest touchdown passes allowed, tied for fifth in the league of fewest passes over 20 yards, and tied for third in opposing quarterback completion percentage. Now, there's obviously other factors that play into all those stats, but the fact that there's no gaping number of huge plays indicates that maybe there are fewer blown coverages.
There haven't been that many. No, you're right.
Yeah. So okay. That's kind of interesting.
And if
you check that out in Thursday's paper if you get a chance. And with that, we've reached the portion of the program where we go into the scouting report. So let's talk about these Rams. Now, do we want to start with the monstrous defensive side of the ball, or do we want to save
that? Sure.
Yeah, let's start with the defense. Change it
up.
All
right, you want to go D?
Let's talk about the defense.
All right.
The D is Greg Williams. He's the coordinator. Jeff Fisher, of course, is heavily involved. Fisher's a defensive background all the way. Greg Williams is a flamboyant guy. He was with the Saints during the Bounty stuff. He was there when they won the Super Bowl. He's been with Fisher in Houston and Tennessee. He's a heck of a coach. He's a pressure coach. He wants to blitz. He wants to get that ball out of the quarterback's hands, and then he'll take his chances downfield. He's knocked a lot of quarterbacks out and around in his time. He's a very interesting cat.
Okay.
He and Rodgers have dueled several times in the past, and they have a history, and he had a history with Favre, too. He's a heck of a coach, interesting guy. All right, so, but he doesn't have to do it. He wouldn't have to blitz with as much as, because he can get this great pressure with his front four, but he still wants to send people. And what he did against Arizona in their upset Sunday, a lot of times in his sub package, he'd go with a 3-2, he'd remove a D lineman, generally Brockers, the nose. He'd have three down linemen. He'd have two backers, not just in the A gaps. They would be in different gaps. And then he'd have those slots in tight, in blitz positions. And he would send various combinations and drop two and send five usually. And it's good stuff. All right, the front four. Best in ball, I think. I think you got to say it is. All right, the leader, three technique, Aaron Donald. You saw him play for the Syracuse for the
Pitt Panthers.
He played for
Pittsburgh against Syracuse twice while I was there.
What did he do to the Orange?
What he did to everybody else, Bob. The guy had 28 tackles for loss from an interior lineman position. It's unheard of in college football.
He laid waste.
He did.
6'1". Some people thought he was too small, despite this great quickness and he's a great
kid. Is he really 6'1"? I thought he was smaller, honestly.
No.
I really did.
Okay. All right, he is he's hell on wheels.
Yeah.
I mean, he's Tommy Harris from 10 years ago. He's Atkins in Cincinnati before the injury.
Sure.
He's going to shoot a gap on you. It's hard, really hard to block him with one guy. These coaches told me this Tuesday. This is a heck of a player, and he's got to be dealt with. So Lindsley and the guards are really this is somebody to watch, number 99.
When you were doing your draft preview the year he came out, Were scouts really impressed with him, or was there some mixed opinion, as you said, because of his size?
There was some mixed opinion, okay. Yeah. Some loved him. Some were a little lukewarm. Didn't see it happening.
Did you have a hunch of which way it would go?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
I just, no. All right, the nose is Michael Brockers from LSU, first-round pick in 12, I think it was. He's a lot more than just a shock absorber. I mean, he can control you with the arms and shed, make a play. He's got some rush, too. He's a really good nose.
I think if I remember correctly from Aaron Rodgers talking today, that he mentioned Brockers in addition to Donald as one of the key players on that line. He likes Brockers.
Let's stay inside. They got eight guys. They're all going to be active, and they all can play. This Ethan Westbrooks. He's from West Texas A&M, undrafted in 2014. People thought, he had a bunch of production there. Scouts, he's got like a tattoo right on his face, if I recall them. Several told me this.
No, Bob, that's Mike Tyson.
But people respect this Westbrooks. Inside, outside, he's not great against the run, but he's a natural pass rusher. 93 gets in there, he's got to be cause for concern. He's a good player.
Okay.
Nick Fairley, the former Lion. You know, as recently as a year and a half ago, I think a year ago over in Detroit, he did damage against the interior of the Packers when the Lions won. He slipped. His body doesn't look as fresh. He's had some injuries since that game. They paid him 1.5 guaranteed, but, you know, really, he might be the eighth most effective D lineman, and he's still a pretty dynamic individual. All right, let's go outside. The best player is Robert Quinn, the best end. He's at right end. He does not move to left end. I checked this out to see, thinking it would be Barkley, but no, he's going to be playing over Bakhtiari the whole game.
Okay.
6'4", 265, tremendous speed, low 4.6s. He used to just be a speed rusher, almost the best in the business. But now he's been able to work inside. That's risky business against Rodgers in the scrambling dimension. And he's done some bull stuff on guys who overset on him. He has run over some people. He did it to Jared Veld here for Arizona on Sunday. Quinn, is he as good as Justin Houston? Now, Houston's a stand-up linebacker. Horse apiece. They're about the best pass rushers in the business.
Okay.
The other end is Chris Long. Came off of whatever he had last year, an ankle injury at mid-year. He missed the whole second half of the season. Long's extremely intelligent. 34 on the Wunderlich. I remember interviewing him in St. Louis a couple years ago. What an impressive guy. He's good. He's like 30 years old, but he has speed. He has quickness. His strength is okay. Solid player.
And it's important to note, that the major difference between, this defense and the Packers defense, obviously the formation, 3-4 for the Packers, 4-3 for the Rams, which means that the Rams are counting more on a traditional defensive line to generate pressure than with outside backers like the Packers do. And as I remember when I was doing a story on Monday, I think it was, I think there's five players on the Rams, if I remember correctly, that have multiple sacks, and three of them are true defensive linemen, where you'd be unlikely to see those types of numbers from the Packers. It would be the other way around with the outside backers. So that's one thing to look for, is more pressure generated by the actual front four compared to the linebackers.
If Vic Fangio had this defense, it would be a four-man rush. But with Greg Williams, he's sending people from all over the place. He wants that ball out of there, and this is going to be a great test because he's not going to back off against Aaron Rodgers, no matter how good Aaron Rodgers is.
And he'll blitz corners too, things. Right?
He will, some, but more safeties.
More safeties, okay.
And, Aaron got him in that opening day against New Orleans, the kickoff game here like 3 years ago when he was still with the Saints. Rodgers ate him up. The Saints hung in. I think they lost right on the goal line at the end of the game. They've had their battles. But Greg will not back down. He's going to go down with his boots on. Okay. They got William Hayes. His cap salary is 4.6. He's never been a starter. He played with the Titans for like 5 years. Fisher knew him from there, brought him to St. Louis. William Hayes is an interesting guy. He's strong. He can rush inside and outside. He's just a real good player.
Okay.
And Eugene Sims, who missed the Arizona game last week with some kind of injury, knee, he had full participation today, so Sims has had a bunch of sacks over the years. He's got quickness. So that's your eight-man front.
All right, let's move on to the next level.
All right, James Laurinaitis, the middle backer from, he's been there 7-8 years.
Where'd he go to school?
The school down south. So he plays every down. He's done this. I don't think he's ever missed a game. Is he great? No, but he's good.
Yeah.
He's got enough sideline range. He's done some good pressure work this year in the A-gaps. He's a good player. All right, they suffered a real blow when Alec Ogletree, their starting Will backer, and a guy who also played 100% of the snaps, leading tackler by far. What did he suffer? Broken ankle.
Believe so.
In Arizona in the third quarter.
Fisher said today on the conference call that he thought Ogletree had as good a start to the season as any linebacker in the league.
Well, that's high. Okay, so Ogletree's out. He has great speed. He's like 4.48.
Wow.
Runs all over the darn place, you know. He has some weaknesses in coverage, but, I mean, this is a guy who flies around and makes plays, man. All right, so they're taking Akeem Ayers, the Sam backer, but because nobody plays two-back conventional stuff anymore, he was averaging about 16 snaps a game. He's coming over to replace Ogletree.
Okay.
Ayers was a second-round pick from UCLA by the Titans. Last year, Belichick traded for him in September, and he played on the Super Bowl winner. He can play down. He can play up. He's pretty athletic.
Okay.
He's no Ogletree, but he's not bad.
Sure.
And now I think Jolon Dunbar, a real tough guy, played 7-8 years. I was thinking Dunbar.
I just pointed out Cameron Lynch because Cameron, I covered him at Syracuse, and I was just texting him yesterday about the game this week, and I went to his hometown during college to write a story about him, Lawrenceville, Georgia. Yeah, I went to his school. He is a terrific, terrific kid. Undrafted free agent, made the team. He is as nice of a football player as I've ever been around. Really smart. Studied engineering at Syracuse. He honestly himself didn't think he was going to have a shot in the league. He was talking to me once about what he wanted to do after football because he was convinced it's over. So I hope he gets in the game because he's as good of a kid as I've ever been around. And I was texting him the other night. He's super excited to see Lambeau Field. I was talking to him yesterday.
I'm embarrassed. I've never heard of this player.
That's okay. That's fine. He wasn't at the combine or anything, I don't think. No.
He wasn't any. Holy man.
Yeah, really smart kid. I hope he gets in the game. Yeah. I hope he does.
Huh.
Do you think he has a shot to play based on their depth? I don't know how much they rotate their linebackers. My guess would be special teams only.
Yeah, I don't even know how much he's been active.
I think he's got a tackle. I know that.
Does he?
Yeah, one. So he's been I think he's been active. Has he been active?
Yeah, one special teams tackle.
Okay, so he hasn't been active very much. Okay. Yeah.
Okay, so that's their backers. Now let's go to the secondary.
Yeah.
Janoris Jenkins, the right corner. He'll be over there with James Jones. Janoris Jenkins got a lot of talent. 4.43. A lot of talent, a lot of swagger. He's physical. He really is. He will gamble, though. And he can be beaten on double moves. He will make a pick on you, though. You got to be careful, but you can beat him, too. Trumaine Johnson on the other side. I don't know. He's got this ideal stereotypical size at 6'2", 205. Tries to intimidate wideouts downfield. Kind of a high tackler. Doesn't run great. I think you can get after him, but the height helps, you know. The nickelback is LaMarcus Joyner, that little guy from Florida State who, you know, was a controversial player. He's only 5'8", and everybody loves this kid. Smart as a whip and football smart. Everybody loves him. He's physical for his size. Well, he'll be in that slot against Randall Cobb, and he's a little leggy. He's a little thin. I just don't know if he has really the flat quickness and everything to handle Cobb. And
okay.
He didn't play well as a rookie. I just don't know where he's at right now.
Okay.
Okay, the safeties. It's interesting. There's three of them. And T.J. McDonald's the starting strong safety. His dad, Tim, was a Pro Bowl safety for the Niners in the 80s. T.J. is a classic box guy. He's kind of a heat-seeking missile. He's an old-fashioned, you know, kamikaze. Reckless, probably too reckless. Can get exposed in space. The Cardinals did it to him Sunday on a touchdown pass. All right. Roddy McLeod is an undersized free safety, former free agent, shade under 5'10". He's improved over his 3 years. He's not great. I guess he's functional. But the key player really here now is going to be Mark Barron. I forget. He was an eighth or ninth pick in that 2012 draft. Tampa tried to use him as a conventional safety. It just didn't work. He's just not real fleet of foot, and he's not a deep hash guy. But now with Greg Williams, he's got the perfect role. Williams has always had a hybrid kind of a safety linebacker.
Okay.
And so Barron could play, he could play as much as Ayers. If they think they can stop that run, he'll be in there in that 4-2 nickel.
Sure.
Now, he's about 217, and you don't really want a steady diet of Eddie Lacy coming down his throat or, you know, sitting or something. So, but that's what they'd like to do. He's going to play a lot anyway in packages. He blitzes like crazy. He's a physical guy. He times his blitzes well. He's a threat. You got to really know where number 26 is. So that's the D.
Okay, let's shift over to the other side of the ball.
All right. You got Frank Cignetti. He's the first-year coordinator. He's a friend of McCarthy's, coached with him at New Orleans. They're last in the league in yards. So they're not exactly a hot outfit. They're coming off at one their best game, though, however, against Arizona. They look good. All right, receivers. You got four of them. You got Kenny Britt, another former Titan who Fisher knows, Fisher drafted. Good, 6'3", pretty good player. I mean, he's not as good as Alshon Jeffrey or Jordy Nelson, but, I mean, he's a legitimate number one. He's okay. You got Tavon Austin, the little guy from West Virginia. You saw him play the Orange?
And Stedman Bailey.
Oh, yeah, from saw there as well.
Yep. That, I tell you, that offense had Geno Smith, Tavon Austin, and Stedman Bailey. That is not a bad college offense whatsoever. They torched people. Syracuse beat them, though.
Really?
Believe so.
Up on the dome?
Well, they beat them once on the road.
Jeez.
They beat them once at home. They killed them at home. And then I can't remember if they won. This is bad. I should remember. I can't remember if they won or lost to them in a bowl game. Covered a bowl game at Yankee Stadium, the Pinstripe Bowl.
That's cool.
Open-air press box in January is not cool.
No.
They handed out hand warmers. It was freezing. Couldn't type.
What was the temp?
Outside, 20. Inside, 28, 30. It's brutal.
Late,
snowed.
Late December 4 inches or something?
Yeah, it was like December 27th. 4 inches of snow the day of the game. Brutal. Coldest game I've ever covered.
Man,
I had to actually wear a winter coat and a hat and gloves during the game.
You knew it was open air? Yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, for Yankee Stadium, as nice as it is, they don't play baseball in December. They don't need a closed press box.
Holy man. Okay. Yeah. All right, you got, so Austin is quick as heck. We know about him. They're going to use him on tear sweeps. Bailey's a really good, sharp route runner, a thin guy, good hands. And then you got Brian Quick, kind of a slow study guy, but he's, again, big and fast, just trying to make a go of it, just back from a bad shoulder injury, I think it was. So, okay. Tight ends, they got two of them. They got Jared Cook, another former Fisher Titan. Isn't that amazing? He's got the whole team up there. Jared Cook can run, really run. He's impressive in the open field. I mean, he's just he's a beautiful, fluid athlete. He drops too many, not a blocker. Lance Kendricks, the kid from Milwaukee King and the Badgers. Lance Kendricks, pretty good player. I mean, he started, he still starts. He's all right. He's a pretty good player. They got two good ones there. And Corey Harkey really plays fullback. Harkey's a beast of a blocker. He's 265. He's usually in the backfield when they want to go two back, and he can do damage.
Okay. What do they got up front?
It's not a good group. Probably the least experienced group in the league. It's left to right. Greg Robinson. It's a lot like the Niners, in which the left side is better than the right side, I would say.
Okay.
Greg Robinson, the second pick in the draft last year from Auburn.
Yeah.
A junior, played a lot of guard last year as a rookie.
The scouts like him?
Yeah, because of his unbelievable run blocking.
Okay.
That's what he did at Auburn.
Does he play nasty a little bit?
Yes, he does. Yeah. Physical. His feet are good, not great. He's not there yet. He can still be exploited.
Okay.
Jamon Brown, a rookie third-round pick. That surprised me, from Louisville. A big space-eater guy. He played okay. All right, Timmy Barnes is a little sought-off center from Missouri. Actually, he's not that short. Free agent, just trying to make a living, you know?
Sure.
Roger Saffold, a former second-round pick from Indiana. He's the right guard. He's played tackle, left tackle, guard. You know, he's got really good feet, tackle feet. Not real physical, though. He can be knocked around inside. And then Rob Havenstein, the rookie right tackle from Wisconsin. He shocked me when he was taken in the second round by the Rams. Second round pick. Didn't see that coming. But, you know, the guy's had that position now, and he's held up pretty darn well. Yeah. He's made a lot of Badger fans proud. The guy is playing pretty good football. I mean, he's exposable, certainly, if there is such a word, but he's been okay.
Yeah, on the conference call today, Fisher said that I know one of the guys, there were two players on the defense that went up to Fisher during training camp and said, this kid's going to be really, really good, in reference to Havenstein. One was Chris Long, who said he was extremely impressed. Yeah. And I can't remember who the second guy was, but it was another one of those D linemen. Hmm. Fisher said they came up to him and said, this kid is going to be really good. Hmm. So they're impressed with him so far.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. Quarterback Nick Foles. He had one of his greatest games in that three-year Eagle career at Lambeau Field. I mean, he was unreal that day. They beat him 27-13, and he had a 149.5 rating. Foles, you know, he did a lot of running that day in Chip Kelly's offense, but he's not a runner. He's a lumbering 5'140 guy. His arm's okay. He's kind of a game manager, really, right now. Not real accurate. Takes care of the ball. He hasn't really put it up for grabs, and you know, despite his offensive line is not real good, he's been okay.
Okay.
Running backs. So this is where the Rams all of a sudden, you know, the Packers are catching them at an inopportune time. Had it been the first 2 weeks, they wouldn't have seen Todd Gurley, but now they are seeing Todd Gurley. Gurley's from Georgia, blew out the ACL, surgery November 15. So he's less than, a little over 10 months away.
About 11 months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. All right, he didn't do anything in his first game, game three. And then in Arizona, he was shut down the first half, four carries for like two. And then he exploded, finished with 149.
Is that what he had, 149?
Yeah.
That what it was? I thought it was 164.
Hmm. No, 149. He's got okay. 155 on
You're
the
right.
year.
You're yeah. right, yep.
So he had a couple long runs. You know, the guy's strapping, is a physical specimen. He runs under 4.5, although he never ran a 40 because of the knee. The estimate's 4.45. I mean, he's, you know, a stud, right?
Yeah.
And he catches the ball pretty well. Blitz pickup, don't know. They're usually going to get him out of there on third down. But he can run over you, through you, away from you. So all of a sudden, this is another good back the Packers have to do something with.
Okay.
Benny Cunningham's a tough guy. Comes in on third down. He's not bad. And little Trey Mason from Auburn has led the club last year in rushing. He's not a bad breeder kind of a guy. That's the O. The special team, they got an outstanding punter, at least in a dome, Johnny Hecker. They got a really good kicker in Greg Zuerlein. John Fossil Jr. is the coordinator. They have a dangerous punt return in Tavon Austin.
Sure.
And Benny Cunningham's kind of a tough guy as a kick returner. Their teams are pretty good. I picked this team to make the wild card, to win a wild card.
I don't think I did.
And I took them over Arizona, and I don't know if I should. Right now, I guess I'd take Arizona over these guys, but they're not bad. I just don't know how good Gurley is and what he's going to impact.
Obviously, their best unit is their defensive front, and I know you wanted to talk a little bit more about those guys in terms of the roster building and how they came together.
Yeah. You know, they got eight guys, and Fisher had a good nucleus when he got there, and he's come in and he used draft picks in 2012 on Brockers and 2014 on Donald, and then he signs Nick Fairley in March for, you know, pretty good money. And it just kind of reminded me of some Super Bowl teams that hoarded defensive linemen. And there's three clubs that have won. It's not an all-inclusive list, but there's three teams in the last 30 years that have won more than one Super Bowl that did the same thing. The Niners. I remember talking for the book to Bill McPherson, their D-line coach and later coordinator, against Miami and Marino that day in 84. They had nine D-linemen active. And they had a bunch of these old guys. Louis Kelcher came from the Chargers. Gary Big Hands Johnson came from the Chargers. You weren't even born yet, Mike.
No, I was not.
And they harassed Mr. Marino.
What year was this again?
84.
Okay.
You were not.
I was negative six.
Dwayne Board. I mean, these are good players, all veterans, no salary cap back then. DeBartolo paid him a ton of money, and they all came to San Francisco and won a bunch of Super Bowls. All right, now Dallas. Dallas didn't have that luck. When they won their first Super Bowl in 91, there was no, the first two, there was no salary cap. And the cap came in 93. And they lost a lot of their great defensive linemen. God, that year in 92, Tony Tolbert, Tony Casillas, Russell Maryland, Charles Haley, Hall of Famer. Off the bench, Jim Jeffcoat, Jimmy Jones, who got huge money after this and a couple months later. Chad Hennings from the Service Academy, and Leon Lett. What a group. I mean, had they been able to keep that young team intact without a cap, they might have won five or six, seriously. That was an awesome Dallas team. And then the Giants.
Giants. Yes.
Ernie Accorsi and then his successor, Jerry Reese. They kept drafting guys. They took Jason Pierre-Paul when nobody really saw that coming. So that when they shocked New England in 2011, that club, Justin Tuck and Paul at the ends, Linval Joseph and Chris Canty inside. Off the bench, you still got an effective O.C. Umeniora. Tollefson, Ted Thompson's seventh-round pick in like 05. Who was effective? Rocky Bernard came from Seattle. He had interior rush. And Jimmy Kennedy, another big guy, former first-round pick. So, you know, there's precedent for what Fisher's trying to do. And as these scouts or coaches told me Tuesday, it's going to keep them in every game. This is a really a fierce rush, you know. We'll see if it keeps them in a game at Lambeau. They're a 9.5-point dog.
It'll be interesting to see. I think, you know, I'd be interested also just in seeing this Rams team in 4 or 5 years, you know. Because if Gurley becomes one of the best backs in the league and Foles stays steady enough, if they can get either of those young receivers, Bailey or Austin, to develop into something more significant, you're looking at a team that could be a team. That could be a real team, especially as Carson Palmer nears the end of his career. Who knows if San Francisco will be able to rebuild. The Rams could end up being a very solid perennial threat in that NFC West, do you think?
I mean, Seattle's not going away.
Right, Seattle's not going anywhere.
No, I mean, they got a young quarterback, and the Rams don't have a QB.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
But I like what Fisher's doing right now.
But my point is just that when Carson Palmer reaches the end of his career, which is sooner than later, there's an opening for a second team there to, mm-hmm. to be, you know,
yep, right,
a player.
Right. Okay.
What do we got? We got something about 1995. You're going to dig into the archives a little here.
Let's dredge it up. We got the Journal Sentinel sports page from Monday, September 4.
Okay. September 4th, 1995.
20 years ago.
This was 12 days before I turned 5. I had not yet gone to kindergarten, Bob.
Our columnists were Michael Bauman and Dale Hoffman.
Okay.
Two columnists for the JS that day.
Not bad.
Nope. And probably three writers. Okay. First game the Rams ever played is the St. Louis Rams.
After they moved from L.A.?
L.A.
Okay.
They came to Green Bay. They were a 7.5-point dog under Coach Rich Brooks. Lambeau at the time, 60,104.
Okay.
20,000 less, Mike. The Packers were getting good. This is Favre's fourth year.
Yep.
High expectations. They had lost to Dallas the two previous years in the playoffs, but a lot of expectations. This game really lives on in my memory, and most of them certainly don't. But this one was a bad game planning day by Mike Holmgren. And the parallels with the offensive line, the problems they had at left tackle, sort of if Barkley has to play or if Bakhtiari, whatever, a lot of it comes down to help, and that's what this game came down to. So the Rams had nothing going on offense. They had Chris Miller at quarterback. They gained 183 yards, and they won this game 17-14.
Yeah, I think the 49ers had 196 last week, so that's not too much better.
No. Rich Brooks, he had a heck of a quote. Didn't paint a Rembrandt today, Brooks said.
That's a good one.
Rich was the longtime coach at Oregon, wasn't he? Yeah. And then he later became head coach of the Atlanta Falcons, I believe. So what happened here? You can't believe it. A block punt was the thing that turned it around. And who did it? Isaac Bruce.
Okay.
He wasn't even much of a receiver at this point, just starting his career. He blocked a punt, you know, and that was a key.
That's what we're waiting for from Mr. Janis. The block punt to trigger the Hall of Fame career.
Holmgren, Ken Rutgers couldn't play left tackle that day.
Okay.
He was a really good player, Mike. And so Holmgren had to make a decision, either Gary Brown or Joe Sims. And he started Joe Sims. And Joe Sims got his brains beat in. He was no match for Sean Gilbert over there. Gave up two sacks. He got benched. Brown came in. But that Ram front four, just like today's, they had Kevin Carter, the big towering DE, and a real quick three technique, DeMarco Farr. And they did the Packer line a damage. I thought our defense really dominated the game, Brooks said. But what did Mike Holmgren said? What did Mike Holmgren do? He did not help those. And this was an era where you could help Mike because it was two back.
Right.
You had conventional tight ends. There's a lot of things you could have done. But he really didn't help these tackles.
Okay.
And it kind of cost him the game. It also didn't help that Brett Favre flung three interceptions. I want to read this quote from Holmgren a couple days later. Where's this remark from Mr. Holmgren? Mike says, I don't think I can find it on the spur of the moment here. Yeah, here we go. I think Brett will look at it and say he's played better football games, Holmgren said. He tried to force a couple things in there to make plays. They were aggressive mistakes. But you can't. He knows better than anybody. He has worked very hard to control that type of decision-making. And you have to. And he will. I wouldn't call this a step back. Mike, I mean, you know, reading, we all knew Holmgren the way he spoke and all this. But he was pissed off. And what Holmgren said the next day in his presser, now let's just see if you would hear this nowadays, okay? I'm not going to tolerate, and this guy had a huge temper, I'm not going to tolerate the type of mistakes that we had in our execution, the sloppiness of play, Holmgren said. That was uncharacteristic, and I'm not going to tolerate it. So there's not a lot of guarantees with the group going into this ball game. He was burned, and he and Wolf both, they cut people.
Okay.
They believed in putting the fear of God into people, and they did. And they hammered guys. 73 plays for the Packers. Holmgren did not call back-to-back rushes, running plays. He never did it even once.
Wow.
He had Edgar Bennett in the backfield. So the Rams won that, and it's one of their – well, no, they later won a Super Bowl. They were in two of them. So it's not one of their great victories, but certainly what a way to start that franchise. Very similar. Green Bay is now a 9.5-point favorite. It'll be a huge crowd, a festive crowd. High noon, just like this game. The weather was beautiful that day on September 3rd.
I think it's supposed to be nice again on Sunday.
You got a great defensive line and not a very good quarterback. A lot of parallels, and Green Bay has to avoid this, what would be a colossal upset.
Absolutely. It'll be fun to watch on Sunday.
All right, Mike.
Let's move on to the questions and see what we've got here. All right, what do we got for the first question here, Bob?
Will Demarius Randall be the starting outside corner by week 10? He has the length and the ball skills, and this comes from Jesse Melichar.
It's a good question. Demarius Randall, obviously a first-round pick by the Packers, played a lot of safety in his day, but they saw the ability to move him to corner, and so far it's been a successful move. I think he's played really well on the perimeter for them so far. I'm not sure if he's going to take over the outside position in the base defense because, honestly, the Packers don't play a whole lot of base anymore anyway with the way these other offenses are lining up. So really it's the nickel that they're in, I would say, the most often these days. And in that formation, Randall has been playing on the outside, a good amount, especially with Burnett injured. Now, the interesting question would become, when Morgan Burnett comes back, would Micah Hyde slide in to the inside and then they could keep Casey Hayward outside, or would they trust Randall? I think they might trust Randall. I don't know. We'll have to see.
Yeah, that's
but
true.
I think they might do that. Okay. Let's see. What else do we have here? Well, we've talked a lot about Joe Thomas. You know, why would Joe Thomas be cut in the first place if he's now such an important lone linebacker in that dime defense? What could possibly change in 3 weeks, Bob? This comes from Jason Perrone. Thank you for the question, Jason. What do you think?
Who did he lose out to? They kept Malumba?
They kept Malumba. Well, yeah, well, he's for the inside backers, they really just kept three. Jake Ryan, Nate Palmer, and
they kept Barrington.
Oh, Barrington, that's right.
Yeah, they kept
four. So they kept four, yep.
So he, in effect,
so he lost out to Jake Ryan, basically, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Right. That's right.
So it was really the injury to Barrington, I guess, that predicated him coming back.
Mm-hmm.
And just because they got rid of him in the first place, I would imagine, doesn't mean they thought that he wasn't capable of playing the dime linebacker. They just valued some of these other guys overall more than Joe Thomas playing that dime back. You think? I don't know.
Did we ever see him playing dime linebacker in an exhibition game?
Boy, that's a good question. I know we saw him play inside in the last two games. Capers mentions that repeatedly, how well Thomas played in the last two.
I don't think
we did either.
I think Ryan was doing that some second half of those games.
Okay. So what do you think could have changed so quickly that they decided that's the way to go?
Carl Bradford might have also. I'm not sure.
It's hard to say.
Yep.
But hey, heck of a story for Joe Thomas to come back and play as much as he has.
Yep.
All right, let's see. What else do we got here?
Let me mention this. Mike Wall, a great Packer guard under Mike Sherman.
Yeah.
He got. He was at the combine looking for work. I think he's got a master's, an MBA. This is a very, very bright guy. And Mike Wall got a job with Miami, is in the strength department. And now after all the turmoil on their coaching staff, you know, Joe Philbin hired him. He's been named assistant to tight ends coach. So his career is on the way up. He and Marco Rivera were great guards. Okay. What's that one?
Andy Deal sends us a question that says, should Don Barclay be the backup at the tackle positions? What about Josh Walker? Now, Josh Walker's a guy that you and I both liked in training camp a little bit.
Yeah. I agree.
Think it's worth throwing him out there?
No.
Okay.
I think Barclay has... I mean, since the... He had, since exhibition games 1 and 2, he's played good football.
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't play real good in the second half here the other day, but, he's more of the known commodity than Walker.
And let's face it, Walker's still learning that position.
It's a work in progress for him. He's more of a guard.
Yeah.
His whole life at Middle Tennessee State.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right.
Only converted to tackle when he came into the NFL, so he's definitely still learning there, even though he got a lot of playing time in the exhibition season at right tackle.
Mm-hmm.
Did we see him at a left tackle at all in the exhibition season? A couple snaps, I think.
I think so.
Okay, but not anything consistent or anything like that. All right, let's get one more.
Let's have one for you, okay?
Okay. What do we got here? How about this one? Well, we already answered one from Jesse.
Yeah.
Jesse, we appreciate the three questions you got there.
All right, this is from John P. Love the rookies Montgomery and Randall. Have you noticed if or how they have improved so far?
We already touched on Randall a little bit, so let's talk about Montgomery. Montgomery is a guy that I think has really improved just in terms of feeling comfortable within the offense. And I know that kind of sounds cliche, but like any rookie, when he first got here, they try so hard not to screw up on these first teams with guys watching him that I've been really impressed with how fluid Montgomery looks on offense. He smiles in the huddle when you see replays and things. He looks very comfortable. And I was looking at the snap counts from the game against the 49ers. He played 99% of the snaps and missed only one offensively. For a rookie in his fourth game, that is darn good.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, McCarthy was basically effusive talking about him earlier today and yesterday, just his versatility, the things he can do. So I think just his ability to relax and trust that he knows the offense. There were times where the guys would say that, you know, he presses a little too hard because he knows he's a smart player, just needs to relax a little bit. And I think he's done that, and I think he's going to continue to perform well for this team.
Okay.
Well, we've crossed the 50-minute barrier, which seems to be our indication that we've blabbed for too long on any particular occasion.
And so now we're going to go back to Francis Albert, right?
We're going to go back to Francis Albert, and I'm going to go to sleep in a few minutes. It's 11 o'clock. You're more of a night owl than I am. Let me guess, are you going to go home and have a midnight bowl of cereal?
Of course.
The midnight bowl of cereal before bed, a Bob McGinn trademark for those of you who did not know. Shredded wheat, what do we got open this week?
I think Roundy's Bran Flakes for the late night with 2% milk, of course.
2% milk, of course.
You a 2% guy?
Yeah, of course.
All right.
You ever, now, let me ask you this. Have you ever had cereal with chocolate milk?
No.
Neither have I, but I have friends that I know do it.
I had a friend many years ago who had cereal with orange juice.
every day.
That's absurd.
It is.
What kind of cereal? Like Cheerios? What are we talking about?
I don't know.
Well, you can't put like a cinnamon-based cereal in an orange. Anyway, this is what the podcast turns into once we cross the 50-minute barrier. So we're going to get out of here now. Yeah. Thank you guys for listening very much, and we'll see you next week.
Take care. Autumn wind and the winter winds, they have come and gone.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2 times the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.